My subject today is what love is, and my text is the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians. It's on page 1000 if you'd like to follow me along. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all I have, and if I deliver my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful. It is not arrogant or rude. Love does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrong, but rejoices in the right. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. As for prophecies, they will pass away. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will pass away. For our knowledge is imperfect, and our prophecy is imperfect. But when the perfect comes, the imperfect will pass away. When I was a child, I spoke like a child. I reasoned like a child. I thought like a child. When I became a man, I gave up childish ways. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall understand fully, even as I have been fully understood. So faith, hope, love abide, these three. But the greatest of these is love. Make love your aim. Let us pray silently for a moment. In Christ's name, amen. If the Apostle Paul had never written anything but 1 Corinthians 13, that would have immortalized him. And yet it is interesting in this chapter what Paul does not do. He gives us no definition of love. He does not say love is, and then defines it. The reality is that some things are beyond definition. I often wish I had a tape recorder in my study as I meet with young couples who are planning to be married. I hasten to add, I do not have a tape recorder there. But I always ask them this question: what has brought you to the conviction that you want to spend the rest of your life with Jane or Jack, as the case may be? And I can tell you that they usually go all the way around the world and back, trying to define something that cannot be defined. How do you define love? You really cannot define it. Who can define the beauty of a sunset? Or the sunrise peeping over the horizon as you stand on the beach at the break of day? Can you put into words the fragile beauty of a rainbow? And so those young couples, in all of the fresh vitality of their affection for one another, they cannot put into words the depth of their feelings, and so they finally blurt out something like this: well, I just love her or him. So Paul offers us here no definition of love, but gives us a conception. He conceptualizes what love is like. He defines it by showing us what love does, and he does it in a very appealing fashion. He shows us, for example, what life is like without love. It is a vision of emptiness, as he tells us that life would be very empty without love. He articulates that eloquence and prophecy and faith and gifts of charity and personal sacrifice are nothing unless undergirded by love. And then he shares with us that love is the essence of character. There is no real virtue without love. There is no true patience without love. No real peace without love. No contentment without love. No real optimism or hope without love. For love bears, believes, hopes, and endures all things, he writes. The essence of staying power in life and the motivator of quality in life as to character is love. And then in this great chapter, the apostle tells us that love is the pathway to God. It is love that fully and finally enables us to know even as we are known. So today, Father's Day, I want to talk about love. What love is as it is related to the role of the Father. I've thought a great deal in preparation for this sermon about my own father who has been gone from us now 3 years. And I have thought for all practical purposes since my children are grown and moving beyond the influence of our daily contact about my own example as a father. And I have come to the conclusion as I have reflected on all that my father meant to me and upon all of my inadequacies as a father, that the most important thing a father can do is to love his children in a consistent and unconditional sense. It's true, as the apostle writes, that love is the greatest thing of them all. Some years ago, I read an interesting story in Newsweek magazine. It told the story of the death of a German entrepreneur who was worth $1.5 billion. And when he died, he had a business empire that numbered more than 300 corporations. And he had the reputation of being a crafty and crusty business magnet. It was once reported that he was so wedded to his work that in 1966, when his wife died, that he was away from his office only 2 hours and then was back at work. And when he died, his businesses were generating an annual income of $3 billion. But listen to this, and I quote, "But for all of his enormous power and wealth, the old man had one very human shortcoming. He could not control his family. In the aftermath of his death, his family and their lawyers geared up for battle over his assets. A sad story of a man who had everything, but really had nothing." But the sentence in the story that arrests my attention is this one. He could not control his family. The issue in family life is not control. The issue is love. It is not how many things you can make your family do, but how well you can influence them to want to do what is right and noble and well-pleasing and true. I am of the opinion that you can influence more through love that is unconditional than you can through the issuing of edicts of one kind or another. And I mention the word control here because after a lifetime of observing family life and being in a family myself, I have come to believe that many fathers approach the role of being a father with the idea of control being rather central in their thinking. I hate to say it, but it's an attitude that expresses itself something like this. Since I make the money, I have the most votes in this family. Alan McGinnis, in a book, The Friendship Factor, describes 3 ways of loving that we can easily fall into as a family. He calls one of those ways the gusher. That's the person who just inundates you with syrupy verbiage and flattery. People often leave the church and they walk by me on Sunday morning and said, I know I'm not supposed to say it, but I enjoyed your sermon, preacher. Yes, you are supposed to say that. It's okay. But no one flatters me on my preaching like the person who comes every leap year once. That person just inundates me with the verbiage of flattery. It's all words and no substance. The gusher is the father who brags on his children all the time but never spends any time with them. He leaves the impression that he is a doting and attractive father, but there is no depth to the relationship. Love that is authentic deals with the good and the bad, the trite and the serious, and seeks to remain loving whatever comes. Well, then another type of love is the pressurizer. If you will do so-and-so, then I will do so-and-so for you. A dollar for every A that's on your report card. Have you heard that before? What does that say to a cute little boy or a girl that's just an average student? You know, God does give us some average children. Now, you never ask me to recommend them to any colleges or private schools. The people you write to me and want me to recommend are geniuses, one and all. But God does give us some average children. What does that do to that child? To say a dollar for every A. It puts the child in a bind. It really says, I love you on the condition of an adequate performance. The gusher, the pressurizer. And then Alan McGinnis says, we love sometimes like a ramrod. This is a person to determine to love you in their way, whether it fits or not. They have a rigid structure for love, no feeling whatever for the changes that might have occurred in circumstances. It is love by a formula that is applied whether it fits or not. As fathers, we can easily fall into one of those molds. Depending on who you read, the labels may change, but the implications are the same. In a book by George MacDonald, The Effective Father, he divides fathers into three categories: the king, who rules the castle; the tyrant, who dominates; and the lame duck, who is the father that gives no leadership whatever, just rolls with whatever is coming, and everyone in the family is frustrated. His children are usually insecure and lacking a sense of fulfillment and self-worth. It is my conviction, shaped by experience, that the father-led family is a happy family. But the father-dominated family is an unhappy family, and that unhappiness will work itself out as the years pile up. If a father is to lead a family, it must be done with love as the foundation. If I could go back to the very beginning with my two children, I would do some things very differently. But it's my prayer today that when I have passed from this world, that the one thing my children will remember about me is that I love them. That I love them unconditionally. You remember the haunting lines of the poet, "Backward, turn backward, O time in your flight." If I could do that, I would love my children even more. I would yell less and listen more. I would hug more and deliver fewer lectures. In short, I am convinced with Paul that the greatest thing of them all is love. Now, in the remaining time we have on this Father's Day, I want to say four things about love as it relates to life and to being a father. The first is this: love is essential, not optional. Paul says it so pointedly: without love, we are nothing. We are a noisy gong with a hollow sound that makes no contribution to the melody of living. I just finished reading a very disturbing book that I commend to you. It's entitled Our Endangered Children by Vance Packard. It's his most recent book. And in that book, he documents in disturbing and in devastatingly accurate fashion that ours is a society that is becoming more and more hostile toward children, some by deliberate intent, others by benign and unthinking neglect. His basic premise, based on extensive surveys by the Lewis Harris Organization, is that there is a deterioration in the overall quality of parenting in American life, and that deterioration is spreading and is already widespread. Contributing to this, he says, is the millions of mothers who are not home because they have joined the workforce. And contributing to this is the massive breakdown of the American home, leaving millions of children with single parents who must of necessity work to support them. And as a part of his research, Packard goes down to a house for runaway children in Broadway, one of the toughest neighborhoods in the city. And many of the children who come through there, the thousands upon thousands of them every year, have been horribly abused and scarred. More than 2,000 of them on an annual basis are under 15 years old. And when questioned about why they have run away from home, most of them say, because I have a rotten father. That center insists that any youngster who turns up there, that young person call home to let his or her parents know that they are safe. And one of the workers there told Packard that when he called home and said to the parent, "We've got your son here," the reply was, "Fine, you keep him." Many of those children have not run away from home. They have been thrown away from home. Now let me give you one other bit of research. Cornell University studied parental interaction with their children over a 25-year period involving hundreds of families. The study reveals that there is a steady and rather abrupt decline in attention and interaction in middle-income families with their children. It is this lessening of contact and fellowship that results in so much alienation between fathers and children and parents and children today. The report from Cornell University reports that the average father involved in that program, when asked how much time he spent with his small or infant child per day, said somewhere between 15 and 20 minutes per day. They hid some microphones in the clothes of those infant children, and after analyzing hundreds of them, they found out that the average father in that group spent 37 seconds per day with their children. Fathers of Peachtree, you hear me today. Love is essential, not an option. Love is patient and kind and all of that, but love takes time. The most precious thing you can give your child is love, and it takes time to do that. You remember Boswell, who wrote the famous biography of Dr. Samuel Johnson? The friends of Boswell said that he often referred to a day that stood out like a precious jewel in his childhood experience when his father took him on an all-day fishing trip. It was a hallowed moment in Boswell's memory, and one of his friends, knowing that his father always kept a journal, thought it would be interesting, since it was such a treasured moment for Boswell, to look it up in the journal to see what Boswell's father had said about that day. And when he found the day, he read this sentence: "Gone fishing today with my son, a day wasted." I hope Boswell was never told what his father wrote about that day. It's never time wasted when in love you spend time with your children. Remember, fathers, one and all, that love is essential. It's not an option. Then secondly, remember that love is active, not passive. Love is a demonstration, not an inclination. Love is actually doing something, not intending to do something. It moves to action from intention. It's not something you think about, but something you do. Love does something rather than just plan to do something. All of us who have children can remember that when they were little, they would often dress up in adult clothes. And I can still see Vicky and Susie in their mother's dresses, dragging all over the floor, walking rather unsteadily in her adult high-heeled shoes. You let that picture lean on you a moment. Our children are always walking in our shoes. It's as they walk in our shoes that their character is shaped. It is as they walk in our shoes that the manner of their religion is developed. It is as they walk in your shoes and mine that the quality of their values are shaped. And what they need from us is a demonstration of love, a good example, a worthy model of love. You know, if a child lives with criticism, they learn to condemn. If they live with hostility, they learn to fight their way through life. If they live with ridicule, they learn to be shy. If they live with shame, they learn to be guilty. If they live with tolerance, they will learn patience. If they are constantly encouraged, they will learn to have confidence and a great sense of self-esteem. If they live with praise, they will learn to be appreciative. If they live with fairness, they will have a sense of justice. If they live with security, they will learn to have faith. If they live with approval, they will learn to like themselves. If a child lives with acceptance and friendship, they will learn to find love in the world all around them. What they need from their parents is a model. Love is active, not passive. It's a demonstration, not an inclination. Carl Menninger has said, what's done to our children, they will do to society. And it all starts at home. It's important that we show our children love in a demonstrative fashion. It is important that your example is clear. Our children always see through our double standards, and they're often injured by them. One Saturday night, a car careened off of a highway, killing a young man, age 17, who was the driver of the car, and injuring his young companion, who was a girl of 17. The girl's mother had been uneasy all evening because she thought she saw a bottle in the young man's pocket as they left home, headed out for a date. And when the distraught parents reached the hospital, they were told by the authorities that the couple had been drinking and that a bottle had been found in the car. The father of the young girl was in a rage, and he said, if I could find the person who sold my daughter that whiskey, I'd kill him. And after some anxious hours, they went back home to spend a few moments rest before returning to the hospital. And when they got home, he walked to the liquor cabinet to get something out of it to relax him, and he found a note that said, Dear Dad, we hope you don't mind us taking a bottle of yours tonight. Our children need from their fathers and their parents a good example, a demonstration of love, love that expresses itself in active ways, in Christ-like living. A father once held his son in his lap and described to his boy what a Christian was. When he was through, the little lad looked up into his father's face and said, Daddy, have I ever seen one? You be sure. You be sure. When your child looks into your face, Father, that they see a Christian, a careful man. I ought to be. A little fella follows after me. I do not dare to go astray, for fear he'll go the self same way. I must not madly step aside where pleasure's paths are smooth and wide to join in wine's red revelry. A little fella follows me. I cannot once escape his eyes. Whate'er he sees me do, he tries like me. He says he's going to be the little chap who follows after me. He thinks that I am good and fine, believes in every word of mine. The base in me he must not see, that little chap who follows after me. I must remember as I go through summer sun and winter snow, I'm building for the years to be. A little fellow follows after me. Well, we try to answer the question what love is. We note that love is an essential, not an option, that it's active, not passive. And then we come to see, thirdly, that love is unifying, not divisive. It draws together and does not build walls of separation. Chuck Swindoll, a current writer on the biblical scene, says that the qualities Paul describes in this 15th chapter, in this 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians about love, that all of them are unified. Every one of them has the quality of drawing us together. Go home and read that chapter with that in mind, and you'll see it there. Love is patient, kind, not jealous, does not brag, is not arrogant, does not act unbecomingly, does not seek its own way, is not easily provoked, does not take offense at wrong being suffered, does not rejoice in evil, gives thanks for truth, bears, believes, hopes, and endures all things. Love never fails. Think about all of those qualities for a moment. They have one thing in common. They unify. They draw together. They bring a sense of unity to the family, even to a friendship. I think the greatest privilege we have as human beings is the opportunity to express love as a father or as a mother within the framework of the family. And as you grow older, you realize how much your children and the stories of family life and the pictures of past moments that were meaningful, how much those things dominate your lives. Interestingly enough, today is my 28th wedding anniversary. My wife was at the 9:30 service. What a privilege she's had these 28 years. And we are now alone. Our children are grown and gone, one in college, one married, and in Philadelphia. And it's not all bad, friends, I will tell you that. Not all good either, but it's been an interesting year for us. I miss those children of mine, and Sarah misses them too. I drive to work now alone when I used to drive them to school and we sang together. I can tell you, though, that is the essence of pure luxury to be able to get up in the morning and just pick a bathroom at random. The sound of hair dryers are not heard in the land anymore. I haven't burned my hand on a hair curler in months. I regularly now find change in my pants pockets, which is a brand new experience for me. I saw a needle point pillar the other day with this message: money isn't everything, but it sure keeps the kids in touch. Friends, that's not what keeps your children in touch with you. It's not what you have, but what you are. It's love that brings unity to your home and mine. And I believe that the father is a crucial part of that unity. Well, what is love? It's essential, not optional. It brings unity, not divisiveness. It is a demonstration, not an intention. It's active, not passive. And then finally, love invests long term, not short term. You remember how this great chapter ends? It says, when everything else has gone, faith, hope, and love remain, but the greatest of them all is love. It's a long-range investment. Somebody gave me a book entitled The 1 Minute Father. You can't be a father in 1 minute. It's a long-range investment. Have you seen the bumper sticker? Have you hugged your child today? The child needs more than a momentary hug here and there. It's a long-range investment. But what is love? How does it express itself in our role as fathers? It's an essential, not an option. It's a demonstration, not an intention. It is active, not passive. It builds unity, not divisiveness. It's a long-term investment, not a short-term. And it's best learned when it is lived as a product of a closer walk with Jesus Christ. I've been reading a book this week, and with this I close, about a remarkable pastor and a remarkable church in Korea. I want to visit that church. It's a church of 350,000 members. That gives Fred Moore something to shoot at. It's the largest church in the world. They have 7 worship services on Sunday morning with 60,000 people at each service. The church is growing at the rate of 10,000 members a month. And their objective is to be a church of 500,000 members by January 1, 1985. I want to go out there and see what's happening in that church. But do you know what the secret is? The church is divided. Cells meet in the homes of the members. It is a huge collection of home churches. And that's what we need. A church in our homes where a family can respond to one another as they live together, pray together, learn together,